Portland City Council will come back to order. It is just after 2 o'clock on Wednesday, October 7th, reconvening for our afternoon session. How's your lunch, Carla? Okay. Can you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. I want to acknowledge Carla and let, you know, we shouldn't just... Very nice.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for the council calendar item for which its sponsor is not yet in the room?
Item 1408, accept the report on the rescue boat needs assessment.
And I think this relates to, doesn't it, Chief, to item number 1409 as well? Okay.
All right, 1409, authorize one-time funding for the purchase of a Willamette River rescue boat for Portland Fire and Rescue.
We will pause for a moment until the sponsor has entered the room.
It's up to you.
He might have some money on the table for you.
Commissioner so, Leonard.
Chief Klum, if I could just have a moment to divert for 1 second. We have some very special guests here from Oldenburg, Germany, which is in Lower Saxony in Germany. And Oldenburg just happens to be a town very close to where my great-grandfather immigrated from here in 1881, Meran, Germany. And so I'd like to... introduce, we have three members of the city council, and I'm just going to completely mangle their names. My great-grandfather will roll over in his grave as I read these names. We have Carl Martin Johnson.
How do you do?
Thank you.
Guten Tag.
And Gerd Langhorst, welcome. Annalise and Wilfred Stimblock, welcome. Christine Pankonen, who's a member of the City Council. And have I caught everybody? And IBW Local 48 has sponsored them, and we are very fortunate to have them here with us. And I have promised that I'm going to return the courtesies to visit them, which I would eagerly do. So welcome. They came all the way to Portland, Oregon, and Commissioner Saltzman is actually the person you should most meet with. They came to view our sustainability practices, our green building, and what Portland is known for, sustainable living. And so Commissioner Saltzman is actually the expert on the City Council, followed closely by Mayor Adams. Commissioner Saltzman has been really the person who has...
Commissioner Leonard, did you explain to our honored guests that in our system of government, while we serve here as a functioning legislature, actually in the hierarchy of things, Joe Esmond is above us, and we answer to Joe Esmond. Did you make that clear?
That's actually not in any of the manuals, Commissioner, so I thought I would leave that on. But I did I did tell them that George Washington would roll over in his grave if he knew the form of government that we had here that mixed the executive, legislative, and judiciary as it does. So welcome here. And we're happy to host you. If there's anything you need, I'm certain the mayor will clear the path for you. Thank you.
And I'll begin right now because of your association with Joe and to a much lesser degree to Commissioner Leonard. During your stay in Portland, just tell them that the mayor said you don't have to pay a sales tax. But keep it to yourselves, will you? Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you.
That is incredible.
So it's kind of a unfortunate segue that I'm going to make, but it's one that I am charged to make nonetheless. May 22nd, 2009 is a date I'll never forget. And May 22nd, 2009 was the date that Commissioner Fish and I threw the switch to turn on the new neon rose over what will be the new headquarters for the Rose Festival Association. And I have to tell you that it remains one of my most poignant evenings of my life, to actually stand in one spot with the mayor and Commissioner Fish, and it was Amanda's anniversary, so I know she was out of town, but with the mayor and Commissioner Fish and I unveiling this renovated building with the brand new beautiful rose symbolizing from here forth our wonderful Rose Festival Association, only to be topped by my favorite musical performer, Curtis Salgado, who gave a performance that night that many said was a virtuoso performance. And the reason that date will never leave me from this day on was an incident that John Klum, the fire chief, and I will never forget that occurred shortly after midnight in the early morning hours of May 23rd. At approximately 1:15 a.m., for a reason known only to the mother and God, this woman pulled into the middle of the Selwood Bridge, some 100 feet plus above the water, and brought her two young children out and threw them over the side of the bridge. They fell into the water, and residents immediately began calling 911 on both sides of the river. Having heard screams from the top of the bridge from children, and then hearing screams in the water moving at night, they couldn't figure out were they cries from a child on the banks of the river, or could it even be that there was some kind of a boating accident in the river. And the reason I know that is I listened to the 911 tapes, as has Chief Klum. Chief Klum and I entered the fire service at almost the identical date. And I don't know about him, but in my career at the Portland Fire Bureau, I saw some pretty horrific things. I've never seen or heard anything that chilled me so much as those tapes of the little girl screaming in the background, "Mommy, please don't, Mommy, don't," before she was thrown in the river. And we could hear that on the tapes. She was in this cold, dark river in the middle of the night, screaming for help, 8 years old, holding her little brother up, trying to keep him alive at the same time for 30 minutes, John?
Yes.
30 minutes. As the fireboat was dispatched from Front Avenue, the David Campbell, which is a beautiful fireboat, but it is a fireboat. And it was designed to put out great volumes of water for great fires that are on the waterfront, not to respond quickly. It took the David Campbell over 40 minutes to arrive on the scene. And after this incident was over, John and I had very, very similar reactions and sat down and had discussions that were very similar from very similar places. We never want to have circumstances exist again that could allow such a horrific thing to happen. But I want to assure the council that this isn't just a reaction to an incident. This is a reaction to a number of incidents, most of which we don't read about or hear about or get the kind of publicity that this incident, well-deserved, did. We have incidents of cars going into the river with people in the cars. We have incidents of people falling in, being shoved in, or jumping into the river that require prolonged, too long responses by our excellent men and women at the Fire Bureau who are as frustrated as John and I are about the location of the existing fireboat and the slowness of it. So we sat and talked about what we could do. What could we do in the middle of a recession when resources are tighter than they've ever been? What could we do in the middle of a recession when we had a need that we need to fill, and we had little money to pay for it. So John and I developed a plan, and the plan is basically this. We will use the existing resources within the fire bureau to reopen what had heretofore been a closed fire station on the east side of the Hawthorne Bridge that, interestingly, used to have a fireboat located at it until the 90s when it closed. We'll commit to the ongoing resources required to staff that station from existing resources. If the council will help us by purchasing a rescue boat, a specific rescue boat that was designed not as a fireboat, which has to be heavy, which has to be, by definition, a piece of apparatus that is capable of discharging thousands of gallons of water a minute, which requires that it be very stable and thus slow and lumbering, but rather a rescue boat that is designed to carry as much equipment as one needs in a rescue, for instance, land-based four-wheel drive units to get to Ross Island is a potential use, large enough to carry the four-person crew and the dive team and police officers, large enough to carry all of them and rescue whatever victims there are in the river and get them on the craft safely. So this boat has been designed to accomplish all of those needs. Of course, the trick is to pay for it. So I'm coming to the council asking that the council consider in the larger context of providing protections for our citizens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's my commitment. That's John's commitment. From now on, if you'll help us in the purchase of this rescue craft, this one-time ask that will bring to Portland finally a piece of equipment that we've needed for a long time, and only because of the tragedy of the incident in the early morning hours of May 23rd did it become prominent enough for the chief and I to sit down and decide we never want to revisit this issue again. So Chief Klum has a presentation to make specific to this request, and the show is yours, Chief.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor, Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to be before you today. As Commissioner said, as a result of the Selwood Bridge incident that we conducted internal rescue boat needs assessment as a result of that, and basically looking at what we learned from this particular incident, and what was very apparent to me early on is differences between our marine program, primarily our fire boat response and their capabilities and functionality, and also what the functionality and capabilities are of a rescue boat. And first, I'd like to start out with a little bit. When police called for a marine response early on May 23rd, that initiated a response from Portland Fire and Rescue through block dispatch of a land-based company, which was Station 20, situated on 22nd and Southeast Bybee, and Fireboat 6, which is stationed at 3660 Northwest Front Avenue, which is approximately a mile downstream from the Fremont Bridge. At that particular time, both companies rolled. The land-based company was on scene in the Oaks Park area within 5 minutes. But as Commissioner Leonard said, it took 42 minutes and actually required a request for a bridge opening on a steel bridge because of the high flows at that particular day in May, to where it even further delayed that response. Subsequently, we did time trials from the decommissioned station at the east end of the Hawthorne Bridge with Rescue Boat 17, which we have on the Columbia River side, to basically address the need for the boat, fireboat bus, which is a large 40-foot-plus class heavy wake boat, primarily stationed on the Portland Harbor side because that's where the majority of the floating properties for the fire suppression that they need to, and because of the slow wake, no wake speed to prevent damage to the infrastructure along the waterfront, it was excessive response times out into the Columbia proper. That kind of dovetailed into our response plan for to assist support in case we have an airplane that lands in the river and so forth for rescue needs. So we ran time trials with Rescue Boat 17, which is the same class of rescue boat that we'll get in a little bit further detail today on the specifications. And in contrast to the 42 minutes it took Fireboat David Campbell to get to the Selwood Bridge area, they were able to make it up there in 5 minutes and 37 seconds. And that is a simulated response from inside the engine house, down the walkway, unsecuring the mooring lines, getting the boat underway, and actually getting into that area. If they were on the river itself, that response time would be further reduced by another minute. So it was pretty obvious to us about what the capabilities of having a fast boat that we don't have to worry about damaging wakes would do. So I'd like to, again, kind of show you the difference about what we all learned through these processes. Is the fireboats definitely have a critical role in our ability to protect our waterfront. We have approximately 54 miles of waterfront when you combine the Willamette, Columbia, and Multnomah Channel that the fireboat, two primary in-service fireboats protect. We have Fireboat Bus, which is on Hayden Island, and we also have Fireboat Williams, which is located at Station 6, along with the reserve boat David Campbell. They are very large boats. They are capable of producing, as Commissioner Leonard said, large volumes of water. The David Campbell can pump 14,000 gallons per minute and actually is built into our response plan for emergency water supplies in the event that we have a significant earthquake to provide water for fire suppression into the downtown and lower central east side for that. But with that comes 87 feet and about 80 tons worth of mass that can only go top speed of 12 miles per hour. And that 12 miles per hour puts out a damaging wake to where it would actually destroy mortgages and houseboats or cause significant damage. But the fireboats are also different. They basically can do everything a rescue boat does, but they do it a lot slower. You know, they respond to the fires, same thing with people in distress, vehicles in the river, but it's more for a more prolonged type of operation because usually it's after the fact when we have people in distress, people falling in the river, jumping in the river, boating accidents, and so forth. Marine emergencies are specially trained for those also. There's a picture of the Fireboat Williams. You can kind of see in scale about the size and the type of particular fireboat. And our protocol is that they have to slow down to the 5 miles per hour no wake speed because of the potential claims that we, or actually the history of claims that we've actually seen as a result. There's certain instances to where we allow them to go faster, but a rescue boat really makes a lot more sense. Portland Fire and Rescue's Marine Program also has two rescue crafts, and these rescue crafts were donated by agencies and citizens of Portland. Their first rescue craft actually came as a result of an incident we had on Morrison Bridge where a lady drove her car off the bridge, and it was a successful rescue from the personnel at Station 1, where at the time all they had was a rescue swimmer that physically went out there and saved that lady. As a result of that and community support, we were able to get our first rescue craft. Just last year, we got our second rescue craft donated to us. These crafts have been in service approximately 3 years, and we have 30 documented saves to where the person would have perished if the rescue crafts weren't there. But with that said, they're a valuable tool. They allow for an operator and a rescue swimmer, but they also have significant limitations. And primarily that is that they're not a 24/7 type of piece of equipment. On optimal conditions with low river levels, slow current, lack of debris, and good daylight, whether it's during the day or moonlit night, the rescue crafts are capable of doing great things. But times during high flows, high debris flow, it's extremely dangerous for the crews because they have limited lighting. They're relatively small. If they hit a deadhead or a log in the river, you jeopardize the crew. So they do not provide the 24/7 response. So it leads us to the difference in what a rescue boat is. Picture here before you is Rescue Boat 17. What we're proposing is a similar boat it's approximately in the 30-foot class. They're relatively stable vessels. They're shallow draft, extremely maneuverable. They have a top speed of 40 miles an hour. And the real unique thing about this is that they're able to achieve that 40 miles an hour in relatively short time with a minimal wake. Rescue Boat 17 at full plane kicks off about a 4-inch wake, which isn't damaging. So they're able to get up to top speed faster and really make some time up there. They're the ideal craft as a result of that for people that are in distress or drowning in the river. The majority of our drownings are in the downtown Portland area. I would say from the Selwood Bridge down to the Fremont Bridge. That's where the majority of the people in distress for calls occur. And also a rescue boat would provide for that 24/7, 365-day response because of its stability, its ability to handle heavy water and debris, and also with the navigational tools that you can incorporate it on, and I'll get in a little bit more detail here in a second. Well, Portland Fire and Rescue is still in communications with Multnomah County Sheriff's Office because we really feel that there's an opportunity for enhanced partnerships, cooperation. We've discussed possibilities of co-staffing, possibly borrowing a boat from them during the interim time it takes to manufacture a rescue boat if we're successful with securing the funding. But there's also opportunities where they're also have their personnel doing education and enforcement in the same stretch of river. So we're still pursuing opportunities with that. The staffing component, as Commissioner Leonard stated earlier, is that currently we have two of the three companies from Station 1 located at this particular site during the general obligation bond seismic upgrade of their facilities at 55 Southwest Ash. That is just nearing completion with tentative move date for the administrative component mid-November, and then the station itself probably in the middle of December. So at that particular time, the engine and the truck company will go back and provide direct service delivery to their normal fire management area. And Squad 1, which is the heavy rescue and part of the technical rescue team, would be the four-person crew that would be staffing the rescue boat on a 24-hour basis. All 12 members of Station 1 will be trained to the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training Rescue Boat Certification, to where we get that flexibility and that redundancy in personnel, to where we don't get staffing challenges. And also, it's good for the members to rotate through to where everybody's familiarized with the equipment. It gives us more depth as far as having people that are certified, qualified, and trained for the boats. The captain of station is yet to be named. We're either going to call it 1Z or perhaps another number is yet to be determined. But they're also be charged with developing and actually establishing and managing the rescue boat program for right from the ground up. The cost estimates for a new rescue craft, and this is based upon the manufacturer who built Rescue Boat 17. So it's $265,000 for the basic hull that you see there in front of you. The power plants or motors and other safety and operational equipment would be $60,000. Electronic and navigational equipment, $20,000. And the unique piece of equipment is a FLIR, which is forward-looking infrared radar. This is a phenomenal piece of equipment that the demonstrations will show that in a dark night, zero visibility, 100% fog, can't see inches in front of you, it'll pick up a duck swimming on the river 20 feet in front of the boat. So anything that emits heat on this, especially a nighttime operation, will be just a tremendous tool for us to be able to find the person in the water and extricate them rapidly. And then $4,000 for the anti-corrosion. So the total estimate is $367,000 for the boat with a projected delivery of 8 months if we go through the RFP process, which would be 4 months and then 4 months for the actual manufacturing of the boat. The other component before you today in the resolution is obtaining an accurate cost estimate in regards to doing a site-specific geotech survey and seismic analysis of fire station on the east end of the bridge. Since it was a decommissioned station, it wasn't included in the fire bond project, which is nearing an end. We have Station 1, Station 31, which is our partner station with Gresham and Portland, and Station 18 in Southwest left, and then the bond is actually closed out. So we need to actually find out what we need to do for the seismic upgrades of that facility. In order to do so, a site visit to analyze the structure, look at the previous geotech information, do gravity lateral load analysis, structural analysis, and actually come up with recommendations for the seismic upgrades and the scope of work to where we can base a hard cost analysis of that. Based upon history of the other bond project, it would just be a guess at this time of what it would take to bring that facility up. So this particular part of the funding request would allow us to shore up and have a high level of confidence in those numbers going forward, so that we could craft language for grant submittals and so forth for funding options. A breakdown of those is the geotech estimate is estimated 20,000. Architectural for preliminary design is 10,000. Cost estimate is 5,000 with a total of 35,000. And we could get that completed within 45 to 60 days. So today I'm before you asking for your consideration and support of the resolution that's coming before you today. And what we're requesting is allowing $200,000 in the fall bump with another additional $200,000 considered next year's budget to finish funding the purchase of the rescue boats and finish up the seismic assessment. And in closing, I would think that this has been, in the 32 years I've been in Portland Fire and Rescue, I think that, as Commissioner Leonard said, I could think about four or five significant events that have occurred in the course of that career. And those are situations and incidents that never go away. And as a result, if there's anything positive that comes out of an extremely negative experience would be the enhancement of our capabilities to protect the citizens with the rescue boat at the station on the east side of the Hawthorne Bridge. And I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, John.
Some questions? Okay. How many rescues versus recoveries have there been since May 23rd south of the Hawthorne Bridge by fire?
I would have to, Commissioner, I'd have to look and find. And
there's been a number because I asked the question, and I'm thinking six.
I would just be.
I actually asked the question. Was told.
So fewer than 10. It sounds like
fewer than 10. Okay.
I guess the other thing I wanted to ask was, it seems to me, you know, I appreciate the passion behind this request, but I also know that, you know, our general fund is strapped, and every dollar that we're putting into the fireboat is a dollar we can't put into the Youth Conservation Corps or some other general fund program. So voters approved a bond measure in 1998 for fire safety, seismic upgrades. Under Measure 50, boats are considered capital facilities, eligible for bond expenditures. And we presently have about $9.8 million of balance in the bond fund, which, according to my estimates, generates about $150,000 a year in interest. So given the strapped general fund, given almost $10 million in the bond fund, why not pay for this out of the bond fund?
Well, my last briefing on the bond fund was, the information I received was far tighter than that. We had just recently requested through the Assistance to Firefighter grant for $1.8 million to help offset the cost of Station 31, which we just found out last week that we were unsuccessful. And with the latest numbers that I have got is that we have approximately $3 million in the bond left for Station 31 with $2 million for Station 18. The apparatus that were purchased for the new fire stations, they were actually earmarked and allocated at the time that the bond was put together to where we could purchase fire engines for Station 12, Station 16, and Station 27. And the line item in the bond budget for the apparatus has been spent.
Well, the commitment made to voters in 1998 when they passed this was this money would be spent in 10 years. We're now at that 10th year. I mean, 1999, 2009, I think you're talking about long-term things. And like I said, we're generating interest on $9.8 million at $142,000 a year, at least. It's probably been better when the interest rates were higher. So I guess I return to my fundamental philosophical question here is, this seems like an expenditure that's an easier hit on the city to be made out of the bond proceeds at this point in time than it is to be made out of the general fund. And so I guess that's ultimately where I would go with this. I can't support this coming out of contingency. I don't think this is a high-priority emergency request, what contingency fund I think of. I mean, this is an important issue. I understand the emotion behind it, but I don't see, you know, I guess I was expecting some sort of data to sort of better bolster the need for this, and I guess, you know, it was a traumatic event on May 23rd, but sounds like since that time there's been fewer than 10 rescue as opposed to recovery operations. So for $400,000, if you want to get me to support it, it's got to come out of the bond proceeds. If you get down the road in budget time, when we're weighing all the other general fund requests, and you come back to us and say, it won't work out of the bond proceeds, you know, then let us consider it as a full council, weighing all the other considerations for general fund dollars at that budget process. So I guess that's where I see things should fall and have the best way to pay for this if we're going to do it.
I appreciate that concern, so let me restate what the chief's response was, including in his presentation. He documented that there had been over 30 rescues by these small craft that we do not allow to go at night. We do not allow to go in certain river conditions. So there are conditions under which the current rescue craft, which have been documented to save over 30 lives, are not allowed to go out. Thus, there are people that are stranded in the river that are not available to be rescued currently, stranded or struggling to stay alive that don't live because they don't respond under certain conditions. Two, I think the number is six since May 23rd of the number of rescues that have happened in the area that you've identified. Maybe 10 is the magical number for you where you think it might be worth spending general fund money to make this kind of expenditure. To me, one is too many. This is not an emotional request. Every fire code that you will find in Title 31 or the Uniform Fire Code or the Building Code is only written after a tragedy. So one could argue that fire sprinklers are as the result of an emotional reaction to people being caught in a building. One could argue that panic hardware on doors that allows people to hit a door and have it open out rather than open in as a result of emotions, as a result of people being trapped in a building that's on fire. We're illustrating, for transparency's sake, what brought this to our attention. And what brought this, I'm not done. We had an incident occur that allowed us to sit down and then accumulate a number of pieces of data, all of which was presented here today as to the need. The second piece as to the bond data, what the chief just said was those dollars are committed to retrofitting existing fire stations. And as I understand the numbers, he's not sure if he has enough money to do what it was he promised to do in the first place when we went to the voters. And I'll let him speak for himself, but in my briefings, that's what I've been told. I've gone to OMF, asked, is there a possible way to provide this funding that doesn't unduly hit the general fund? I was told yes. This comes out of the reserves, not the general fund. I made a commitment to the mayor. The mayor asked this of me early on. You got to look at me in the eye, Randy, and tell me you're not going to commit any new ongoing resources to this. We cannot do that. I made that promise to the mayor. And the part I'm not talking to you about is discussions I've had with the personnel personally at Squad 1, the discussions the fire chief has had personally with the personnel at Squad 1, the discussions I've had with the union, the discussions I've had with the boat pilots, the discussions the chief's had with the boat pilots about compensation, angst, being upset to be split from the main station, all of which we have carefully worked through in detail to present you a package that is merely a request for what I think is an insignificant amount of money for the benefit that the citizens of Portland will get 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. For that money, what you get is a brand new level of service that cannot be compared to. Otherwise, I wouldn't have brought it here.
Well, I come back to my points that I think bond proceeds can be used for this. At this point in time, I think bond proceeds are more important, are more available than general fund dollars. And I think that's how the council should make this call. I guess I would ask also, what is the manner and form of a guarantee this won't cost more ongoing resources? Is there premium pay involved?
Again.
How do we know in a future budget we're not going to be asked to hire more people for this? What's the form of the guarantee that we won't see additional ongoing requests? Is it just your commitment to the mayor?
Well, you're asking and answering your own question. So if you want me to answer a question, ask me a question.
I just asked.
Okay.
Is that the form of the guarantee?
What I have proposed before the council is what I think is a balanced, thoughtful approach to address a critical public safety need that includes taking existing resources and reassigning them in a way that maintains the same level of service that is currently provided, just taking a squad that is at one place and putting it at another place that we already own, that will cross-staff the rescue boat at no additional expense.
No premium pay.
We're not going to pay pilots' pay. We may have to pay premium pay. That I don't know. That'll be something that we worked out in negotiations. But I can't promise you that. But the union's asked for pilots' pay, which is 15%. We have not just said no. We have given a rational reason for no. There's a tonnage, minimum tonnage, that pilots are required by the Coast Guard to have a license to navigate. This does not fall in that definition, so we're comfortable that no means no. We may, on our own volition, decide, because of the responsibilities and whatnot, we may end up in negotiations agreeing to bring in some proposal that includes premium pay, so I'm not going to promise you that. We want to do the right thing. But it'll be a minimal amount of money if we agree to that, compared to the investment, which is a minimal investment, of $400,000 to purchase this boat and provide a level of service with existing staffing. Are you asking me I'm going to promise I'll never ask for another fire engine in the city? No, Commissioner Saltzman, I'm not going to do that. You're going to promise you'll never ask for another cop to work in the city? No, I don't think you're going to do that.
I think you said you would operate this new station
with
an existing resource.
That's what I'm doing.
Okay, so I'm not talking about
that's what you're voting on.
I'm talking about
that's what you're voting on.
Staffing a new station.
That's what you're voting on.
With an existing resource.
You're voting today on a proposal with my promise to staff it with existing resources. You're not going to get me to promise not to ask for new firefighters in the future, if that's what you're asking me.
Commissioner Fish?
Chief, thank you for an excellent presentation. I think I understand everything you said. There's just one piece, I guess, I would ask you for some clarification. Currently, the Hawthorne Station, as I recall, it's actually, there are some folks there now who were redeployed from Station 1. Is that correct?
Correct.
And they're awaiting the Station 1 completion, and they'll be retasked, correct?
Yes.
So the information about the cost estimates for the seismic upgrade and all this stuff, to operate that particular station, you'd have to do all this seismic work? Is that right? Is that what you're telling us?
We're currently in there when it hasn't been seismically upgraded, because it wasn't included in the scope of the bond from 1998. It's separate, but in the intent of trying to get all our facilities up to essential facility status, that's the direction that we'd want to not place a particular unit in an unseismic.
So the ask before us is the $400,000 in two installments to purchase the vessel, correct?
The vessel and the site-specific geotech assessment of
the assessment
to where we could firm up potential costs for.
And once you get an accurate cost assessment on what it would require to bring the station up to seismic code, how would you intend to pay for that?
Well, one of the options that we have that's just coming up within the next 30 days is Jen Clodius, who you know that writes our grants, is Office of Emergency Management through the state, is offering seismic grant opportunities of $1.5 million. So we're going to write a grant associated with.
So it's your current intention then not to ask the council to cover that cost?
Correct.
And so what's before us is the two installments on the boat?
Yes.
Okay, I get that. Thank you very much.
Well, what happens if you don't get the grant?
Commissioner Fritz first. Commissioner Seltzer.
I think, Commissioner Leonard, you laid out very clearly the need for this boat. And we should be prioritizing public safety with our general fund dollars. And I think that Commissioner Saltzman made an interesting question about the bond money. And it would be helpful to me to get some more information on the amount that was, what was promised, what was spent, what's left. I know in my neighborhood, Station 18 was originally going to be a whole new station, and now it's going to be just seismic upgrades. So I don't know what the cost differential on that is, what the land that was purchased for the new station, what's happening with that. I think that I'd like some more information on whether there's any capacity in the bond to pay for this needed service. The other question I have is that in the budget we did this year, we considered closing a fire station, right? And then this one would actually be opening an additional fire station?
With existing resources.
Would the four firefighters who are stationed at the Hawthorne, would they be four less than at Station 1?
Yes. So they would come from Station 1.
So Station 1 would have fewer people
Correct. Physically
there.
Right.
And how would that affect operations of Station 1?
It does not.
Because
the squad is a unique piece of apparatus in that it has its response area is the entire city versus engines and trucks, which have a fire management zone designation. The squad is a specialized piece of equipment that responds to all airport emergencies, that responds to all hospital alarms in the city. It responds automatically to all second alarms. It's the only apparatus that does that. It is probably the least site-specific piece of apparatus. It is the least site-specific piece of apparatus that the Portland Fire Bureau has in that it's so specialized. It does high-angle rescues, for instance, on Rocky Butte or anywhere where anybody's trapped. So it has this specialized mission that lends itself particularly to being at another location, albeit it needs to be close to downtown because they respond to all first alarm assignments downtown. Being on the east end of the Hawthorne Bridge, it allows it to do that. It allows it to still respond in tandem with the first alarm companies that respond currently.
So there's a particular kind of you know this backwards and fronts, and I'm just trying to understand
sure.
It. There's a particular piece of land-based equipment that is staffed by four people that can just as easily sit at the Hawthorne Bridge mm-hmm. than Station 1.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
more so than a truck or an engine, which have to be in a certain geographic area in order to meet minimum response times because the engine has the water and the trucks have the ladders. And they have to be in a certain place or close to that in order to meet response. The squad is unlike any other piece of apparatus in the Portland Fire Bureau in that it doesn't do necessarily what engines and trucks do. It does those things plus a lot of others.
And it's the only one of its kind in the city?
The only one of its kind in the city.
And how many officers are currently per shift in the Station 1?
We don't call them officers. We call them firefighters. And then the officers are actually the supervisors of them.
Okay,
so there are currently 12 per shift. There would be, with this proposal, 8 left at Station 1 because 4 of them would move to this new station.
And under the current operation, are they all 12 of them currently at Hawthorne getting welded?
Well, 8 of them are at Hawthorne, and because the Hawthorne Bridge only allows for an engine and a truck, the squad is actually at Southeast 13th and Powell at Station 23.
Divided up.
So it's already divided up.
And is there ever a time that all 12 of those firefighters need to go to the same location?
Oh, yes, they do all the time. But they can be out at the store. Two of the companies can be in the station, one at the store or out drilling, and they get a response via the radio and they all head to the same address. It really doesn't make any difference in terms of you
right.
if you call for the Portland Fire Bureau, where they came from, as long as they're there
okay.
when you call.
So in terms of staffing, I defer to your professional experience, and it sounds like you've already figured all that out. In fact, they already are split into 4 and 8.
Commissioner Fritz, may I yield for a question that relates to your question? Randy, we've heard in a different context, which is emergency management, the challenges of what would happen if we had a serious, let's say, earthquake or something, and the bridges were down and we could not move equipment. It's prompted by what Amanda was asking, may or may not be relevant, but is there, independent of the reason that we're taking this up, is there a benefit to having this squad on the other side of the river, closer to where our population is, accessible to the airport, et cetera, than on the west side? Is there independently a benefit from having this squad located on this other river?
I think it's 6 to 1 and half a dozen of the other. We have high rises in downtown Portland that absolutely depend on the staffing and the squad to provide the minimum number of people you need to get into a building to deal with high-rise fires. So they're critically needed there. We do have an airport on the east side, and we have denser areas on the east side that require, which is why they automatically respond to certain alarms. They're the only company in the city that responds automatically to certain alarms all over the city. It's really a floating pool of staff that goes to the most critical needed areas of the city for the most unique kinds of things.
And they already go to the scene in their own equipment, right?
That's right.
In their own. They're not on a fire truck.
They have a squad that's a unique piece of equipment, correct, different from anything you see in the Portland Fire.
And I remember, I think it was Chief Clumber once showed me that equipment,
yeah,
and the heavy rig. The other question I wanted to pose is, if you are staffing the Hawthorne Station with a smaller complement of firefighters, in this case four, does that mean that you need the entire space, and or is there an opportunity to use any portion of the space for some other purpose, or at least have that as something we could discuss at some future date?
Well, we actually talked about part of what the review will include is the potential for co-tenancy of a private or nonprofit co-tenancy in the area or on the space that will help to activate that node on the East Side Esplanade, which has been part of our vision all along.
Well, and that music to my ears, because before the Fire Bureau was stolen from me by Commissioner Leonard, I remember, Chief, we had conversations about activating that site and possibly having a restaurant or something else that created some activity there. So I think the extent to which there's still that option with the surplus space, I think, is very attractive and also might help us cross-subsidize some of this.
I'm at Richard.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Because you were interrupted, let's be clear.
Thank you. And you have answered my questions in terms of staffing and ongoing costs. You've obviously thought it through. I can see why it wouldn't cost any more in staffing. You've already divided them up. And so the ongoing cost would be keeping the station open once it's been retrofitted. We think we can get the money from grants for retrofitting. So there would be the ongoing cost of heating and lighting that building.
Which they do anyway because they've used it for offices. The Fire Bureau actually staffs it anyway. So there really wouldn't be any extra cost beyond what it costs now.
Okay. So that takes care of that part of my concern. And returning to how to pay for it. We started in July with $2.25 million in reserve. And we've already committed over $1 million, and we're only a little bit into October. So we've spent almost half of what we have in reserve for this year, and we have another 9 months to go. So if there was a possibility to defer action on this to get some more information about the bond measure to see if there's any possibility of taking even a part of it out of there, you know, if we're down to $200,000 in this year, is there anything in that bond measure that could be used for this capital expense?
And I'm happy to get you that information. What I'm trying to relate to you is the briefings that the chief has had, and what he is saying here very politely, that I am maybe a little less polite in saying, is that the money that they have left in the bond, the reason Station 18 isn't being replaced, they did not have enough money left in the bond to replace it. So they had to settle to remodel it. The reason that they're not doing some of what they wanted to do and some of the other capital projects is they don't have enough money. So I will just to address Commissioner Salzman's concerns directly and your question, there's not enough money to do the things we want to do. We cannot take any of the money out to do anything else.
And you as Commissioner of Charge obviously have gone through every line item and looked at it.
I have.
Because
I looked at that first, and
right,
that's the obvious place we would look as leaders of our bureaus. How could I avoid having this conversation because I knew this was coming, and I looked for every possible way other than this conversation first.
So it would just be very helpful to me to have that information.
We can get that to you, but we need to pass this because I need to set the direction to have this boat start to be constructed, and I've done my due diligence, and I'm comfortable that we're doing what we need to do on the time frame we're doing it. I'm happy to get you that information, but I, in good conscience, can't defer this vote today.
Not even for a week?
No.
Additional discussion?
Well, I just feel uncomfortable with that. You're asking me to vote on something where I don't feel I have all the information.
But it has been on the calendar for since Friday, and as you know, we're happy to supply you with answers to any questions you have. I'm committing to you that I will get you whatever information you want if you will defer to our judgment that we've asked and had those questions answered. I'm happy to follow that up with you. But this is a need that we have identified, and we are trying to proceed cautiously, but focused on getting this craft in service as soon as possible. And I have moved heaven and earth, to be quite frank, to get the firefighters on board with this restaffing configuration. They're not rejoicing. The squad is not rejoicing at the prospect of this plan, but they understand viscerally what it is the chief and I are trying to accomplish, and further delays are not in the best interest of the city.
Additional discussion from council?
So you mentioned grants as a source of renovating this fire station, and the total grant amount available is $1.5 million statewide?
That's through the state of Oregon. It's a $1.5 million cap per award.
And
that's
per
just,
award.
That's just recently come up. And then I heard yesterday that round two of the Assistance to Firefighter grants for station construction and renovation is underway through the Obama stimulus package. So there's some grant opportunities that will become available that we would look at first. And I'd like to just...
Why wouldn't we pursue those same grant opportunities for Station 31,
we have,
Gresham City, and
we did.
Station 18 and Station 1?
We did.
Did we
and
get
we
grants?
We weren't successful. The only department in Oregon was the City of Newburgh that was granted $765,000 out of this last $212 million of the Assistance to Firefighter Grant for fire station construction. And that just happened last week.
And then it seems to me at least the $35,000 or so for the seismic related professional services is certainly bond eligible, I guess. I mean, the bond measure in part was a large part about seismic issues.
It was, Commissioner, but again, since that was a decommissioned station, it wasn't in the intent or the original language of the bond for the seismic upgrades. And so it was separate from the bond because we didn't have any intentions at that time to reactivate that station. And I'd like to just kind of follow up just a statement that you'd mentioned that there's $9+ million left in the bond. That may be true, but it also may be $4 point some million of that might be for the closeout of Fire Station 1, which is yet to be completed. And I know for a fact that when we went through the...
Closeout, you mean the remodeling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm relatively confident that the working with OMF facilities and the individuals and the project managers of those where we look, and Aaron Beck from OMF that is the financial person that we rely heavily on, and the information that we've relayed to the General Bond Oversight Committee, Citizen Oversight, is that part of that assessment of closeout of the bond and the decision not to relocate Station 18 with the need to replace Station 31 is I'm confident that their numbers at $5 million left on the bond are accurate, which is going to be, as Commissioner Leonard said, it's going to be tight. I think the only thing going in our favor now is the downturn of the economy to where we're getting more favorable bids.
So, and then going back to the commitment the city made in 1998 that this money would be spent in 10 years, it doesn't sound like this money, this 9.8, is going to be spent within 10 years.
This is an
expenditure we could make right now from the bond fund that would go towards fulfilling that commitment the city made to voters.
Again, the 10 years, the information that I received from OMF is that there's no requirement to close out the bond in that 10 year, that was a goal, but the amount of money in the bond was established and finite, and the key to it was not to issue the bonds too early that were in queue for the actual construction project.
So I would like to share my thoughts. I'm supporting this, and I'm supporting the vote today for a couple of reasons. One, we have the ability over the next 12 to 18 months to manage this issue in comparison and evaluating it against all other issues as we gear up for the next fiscal year's budget. And we still we still have the option to manage this appropriately when it is the time of our overall annual management of the budget for that to occur. I think that this definitely counts as eligible for the fund from which it is proposed to come. And I agree with Commissioner Leonard in that this particular incident pointed out the fact that we have tens of thousands of people in the proximity of the river downtown that are newly proximate to the river downtown, thanks to the opening of the East Side Esplanade, the widening of sidewalks and bridge walks on going on, one on the Morrison right now. The Hawthorne has been completed. We are successfully getting Portlanders to spend more time on and near the river. That was not the case when this station was decommissioned. Just the opposite had been happening. I think, as Commissioner Fritz talked about, public safety is our most sacred responsibility as a city council. And that given the change in conditions, moving quickly to address this now and get the construction of the boat started and the procurement of the boat started is paramount in terms of my concerns. I trust that we will figure out the ultimate financing and fiscal issues on the facility, which I can guess will be challenging. And we even have options ahead of us on how we pay for the second installment of the two installments on this boat. The fact that Commissioner Leonard and the Police Bureau have figured out how to do this without significant increases in operating costs is a rare accomplishment in our overall efforts to manage the city. And I think it's their creativity and the willingness to be inventive should be rewarded.
Mayor, I would call the question.
Is there any other discussion that hasn't been made thus far? Is there anyone that wished to testify on council calendar items 1408 or 1409? Carla, would you please call the vote?
1408. Leonard?
Well, I feel compelled to say a couple things in response to
Point of order, just sorry, are we accepting the report and then 1408 is accepting the report and 1409?
I apologize.
I just want to make sure what we're speaking to.
I set us up poorly. I would accept a motion to accept the report.
Motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the report as part of consideration of 1408. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Leonard?
So I'll just speak to this one item and then just vote on the other one, but I feel compelled to make sure that I am not misunderstood in how I framed the issue. I didn't react well when I heard the words we were emotionally responding to an incident by building this boat. There is no fire code in the United States of America or in Europe that isn't in writing as a result of a tragedy that occurred that points out the potential for more people to be lost if it isn't addressed. This incident, while horrific, did not justify me coming to the fire chief, working with the firefighters, coming to the mayor, and then ultimately the council asking for expenditure. That would be an emotional decision. What it did cause was for us to sit down and rationally assess the number of rescue incidents that occur on the river. And what we discovered was from the mouths of the firefighters that work on the river, they find it exceedingly frustrated. And I didn't get into the emotional reaction that these responding firefighters had on the early morning hours of May 23rd, which I will tell you was devastating. They were devastated knowing what they had to get to and how slow they were getting there. And what they reported to me personally is their frustration in having more and more incidents occur, such as the one they responded to, and less large fires, yet they're located in an industrial part of the city with their fireboat, having to respond consistently to the core of the downtown area on a fireboat that they know is not fast enough to get there to make a difference. Very frustrating. People that work in our fire stations, colleagues, are people who are, by and large, type A personalities that you might have guessed by now in working with me. They like to get things done. They do not like to sit and wait, or they do not like to go slow when they know somebody's in distress. They want to get there. They want to help them.
And the frustration that I feel here today is if this is being characterized as some emotional reaction to an incident, that's false, or at least misleading. This pointed out a hole in a system that we can repair. And I got the mayor's instructions viscerally when he said, do not bring to me a solution that has ongoing costs. And what we brought to you was a solution consistent with the mayor's